Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast, the show that brings together Michigan's top cannabis growers, advocates, and business owners to offer a fresh and honest perspective of Michigan's cannabis industry. Stick with us to get the lowdown from the people who have been on the ground floor of cannabis business in Michigan and gain insights into where the industry may be heading.
Hello, this is Ryan Basor, and today we are on episode 9. I'm happy to have Jake Abraham from Sticky Ipsy, Sticky Detroit, and soon to be Sticky Southfield here today. And Jake, how you doing? Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Ryan. Doing real well on this rainy day.
Yeah. Well, probably doing a lot of buying, I know, is what we're going to be talking about. So I'm looking forward to talking about that. Today we have Tom Beller, my co-host from Real Leaf Solution. Tom, what's going on in Kalkaska?
It's kind of a gloomy, cold day here, Ryan. Nothing much more to report.
All right, that's uplifting. Sam, over at Fresh Coast, Sam Rosinski, also in Kalkaska. What's going on in Fresh Coast today? You getting any orders out?
Oh, man. Head down, ass up, 1,000 miles an hour here.
All right. Well, you know, as we always do, we talk about our guests and kind of their role in Michigan marijuana and history. And I first met Jake, it was a while back, it was about 2017, and he was introduced to me by my friend Benji, also known as King Jazzy B, an artist and also Jake's good buddy. And you know, I've known Benji and Dory Edwards since 2010, and you know, Benji had great things to say about Jake. I heard a lot of great things about Sticky Ipsy. And we met and learned, and Jake was an early member of the MICIA, and it's definitely, from what I know about Jake, is all about the little guy, loves cannabis, loves the plant, definitely a patient. And besides that, I've been working with Jake with Redemption. He is the operator and owner of the Sticky Stores, and also he's in charge of the buying, which we're going to talk about that today. The market, October 1st deadline hitting with caregiver stuff, and just the volatility of what we're seeing on our end of being sellers and what Jake's seeing on his end of being a buyer of some great stores. So with that, Jake, why don't you kind of give me a more thorough background? I know you got a background as a chef, and pretty interesting on how you got into cannabis. So with that, take it away.
Thanks, Ryan. It's a nice introduction. Yeah, man, I was a chef by trade. I fell in love with Mary Jane very, very early. Chef, you're on your feet, you know, 12 plus hours a day, and not to mention the creative aspect to it, and just what goes better than food, weed, and wine. It was just something we grew up in. It was a passion. It was always active in the restaurant scenes. It was always easy to obtain, always easy to smoke. I mean, we consider ourselves artists a little bit. And, you know, weed enhances everything to the fullest extent. So it was just a natural fit. With all the laws and coming on and everything, you know, it was always something I kept my eye on the market on. And at the time, I was working for Tom Gores, owner of the Pistons. That was his personal chef and his contact person here in Michigan. So I managed his properties, managed the Palace when the Pistons were there. And I actually left him to do this. I saw an opportunity. My friends had the store in Ypsilanti. It was running since 2012. They brought me in to take a look at the books and see if they could get licensed. And unfortunately, with their history, and we all know what a pain it was to get by Bill Bailey, they knew that they couldn't get licensed. So they offered me the store, and I would have been stupid to say no. Coming from restaurants, it's just a hospitality thing. This is a hospitality business, and I love it. There's nothing better than buying, you know, just showing off great weed, man. And, you know, people get excited. People love it. And I'm sure you guys being growers and processors, I mean, you guys are artists too, just showing off your stuff. It's just a great new booming business. And I see a lot of similarities to restaurants and beer and wine. And I'm just really excited where everything's going.
That is that's cool. I knew you worked with Tom Gore. I didn't know that whole side of it. That's nice to hear. And to hear about people taking the jump early on and leaving great careers and getting into cannabis before it was a sure thing. So I definitely respect that. So tell me about Sticky Ipsy, kind of the theme behind it. I know you guys I hear you talking about being the neighborhood store. I love that. Redemption.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, it started out just being Ypsilanti. I don't know if not many people know this. Ypsilanti, it's the second oldest city in Michigan, but it was also a huge bootlegging town. And so when Sticky was first opened, they kind of opened it like a speakeasy. It wasn't like your original dispensaries now. It was really dark. You couldn't see the product. It was really nice and swanky. But, you know, going into the retail style we are now, we really had to light it up. And we put the slat wall up and we hung all the products. I mean, there are so many products we have to display. And we have to make sure that everybody sees all the good products because, I mean, that's kind of what Sticky is now. Is I've always been successful just because of variety. Variety is the spice of life. Me personally, I don't like to smoke the same weed twice in a day. I'm always filling my grind with a new weed every day because that's how I know I'm going to be the highest every day.
That's a good point. And speaking on the market, we've seen some new people enter that are, you know, kind of their theme is just to carry their own flower. And that's it, and not have all a bunch of different brands. So I'm with you on that, but it's fascinating to me. You know, we're talking about the market today of the different marketing ideas and strategies, and it seems to me like the old school dudes that and women that love cannabis are all about having as many great brands as you can.
Not even brands, just strains. I mean, this plant is so beautiful, and there's just so many different smells, so many different flavors, so many different highs. It's really comparable to like wine, man. It just is.
Well, it seems to me like most of the stores that are run with more of the old caregiver mentality, people that have been cannabis connoisseurs for some time, they tend to enjoy displaying all of the variety of products that are on the market, where it's more of the corporate-minded stores that want to keep everything internal, single source. Everything through all the way from, you know, vertically integrated all the way through to sale, nothing from anyone else, wanting all products sold at their stores to be from their sources. And to me, that goes against the whole spirit of cannabis.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, totally agree with that, Tom. And that kind of brings up something that we've been talking about, and really kind of hit me in the last 2 weeks, is dealing with companies or working with, I shouldn't say dealing with some, but of when the decision maker is also the marijuana guy or one of the main marijuana guys and is still hands-on in the business, like everybody that's on this podcast today, you know. And okay, that could kind of lead into, you know, like you're a pleasure to sell to for Redemption, Jake, just because you know what you want, you can make the decision, you do a good retail job of putting out my product, so it's like it's an easy call and it makes my life so easy. But okay, so give us a little background. We're all sellers on here on the show, you know, grower, processor, and a brand. What do you do? What's your philosophy behind buying? Because I'd like to really hear it, because right now I've been saying I think there's a lack of talent in the Michigan market for buyers, because so many of the old owners are not the buyers anymore, or people are coming from other industries and it's different than cannabis.
I mean, I think I just got lucky from my restaurant experience, because buying is, I mean, that's what being a chef is, man. It's not just what you buy, it's how you buy it. Making sure, forming good relationships like we got. I mean, I just try to form relationships with people. I want to get the best price so I can give it to the patients. And I am all about the patients. I mean, we always, if I get a couple cheap pounds, man, the patients are the ones that are going to see that kind of the benefit in that, because they're going to get it cheaper. It's just, as a buyer, it's brands. I mean, there's always the brands that you got to have, because obviously the general public is going to come in asking for what they're seeing on the t-shirts and what they're seeing on the billboards. But then it's also following in the quality growers who, you know, not everybody might know, but they're growing the strains that people want. And they're growing the kind of, I mean, like I always compare it to like a Harley Quinn. Some people it's not really sought after because it doesn't get you real high, but the demand for that out there is really high. So those are kind of things I try to find to keep on my shelf. And it is about quality. I mean, it's got to be a quality product. You can't just serve everything. You got to make sure you got quality products being engineered in a great fashion.
Tom and I are busting out our notebooks for this one, because it's not every day that we get to have an open conversation with a buyer. And so, I mean, you know, Ypsilanti also too is a really interesting town. I've got so many questions, so I guess I'll just kind of start at the top here. I mean, who's the demographic that you're really tailoring to in Ipsy? Because I know it's quite an established market along with Ann Arbor. So, I mean, what type of clientele are you really catering to?
We have pretty much everybody. The one people think we sell to the most is because we're right across from Eastern is the students.
Okay.
And that's probably the least. Because to be honest, they can find this stuff cheaper in their dorm rooms or in their dorm halls than they can come into a shop.
And that brings up a really, really, really good point. Because like when we're starting to create these products, and you know, I think it really comes down to diversification and innovation and having something on your shelves that people can't get on the streets. I mean, is that the case?
Yeah, you still can.
Yeah. And so, you know, especially too with, I wanted to touch base on kind of what Ryan had mentioned too. We've got these, we'll call them box stores that have these, you know, sterilized genetics and sterilized atmospheres. And I think that kind of comes down to the point of, you know, what you got into this business for. And if you're a lover of cannabis, then you're going to try and proliferate as many genetics as possible. But I mean, at a certain point, is it information overload? Is there such a thing as too much variety? I mean, what are you seeing in your shop?
No, 100%. That's why, like, on my shelf with the flower, I only like to have 18 strains.
Okay.
I feel like if I go over that, then it's just, people do get lost. There's just too much to focus on. But I mean, to have the variety, it's just with the brands, people find what works with their body the best. You know, I mean, what one gummy hits one way, it doesn't always hit the other guy the other way.
That is, you bring up a really good point there, where it's now it's about being able to kind of manage expectations at the point of purchase. And from our sales training, our staff is trained to go in and give, you know, bud tender education. How are you preparing your staff for, you know, the myriad of questions that the first time consumers, you know, kind of armed with when they walk through that door?
Well, with my staff, the first question I ask them is if they love weed. Because if you don't love weed, then you're probably not going to succeed at Sticky. I mean, that's pretty much all we talk about. That's what we do. I always go back to restaurants, and I hate to be repetitive, but it's about educating your staff so they can educate the clientele. We're always talking about products. I'm always giving away products. I make sure, I mean, what my bud tender sells, what they're smoking and eating. I think as producers, I mean, you guys start to get samples into bud tender's hands, it'll sell your product even more because they absolutely sell what they're smoking. I listen to patients every day. They ask the bud tender, it's like a bartender. They're asking them for their personal recommendation every time they're standing in front of them. Unless they're so headset on what they got and they came there for one specific reason.
Yeah. And there will always be that type of custom where I had this one haze back in the day and that's all I'm going for. And I'm going to keep walking through a different door until I find it. But I mean, even when I walk through a shelf, you know, I walk into a store, I'm asking the bud tender. And if I'm asking those questions, then everyone else should be. I mean, at least, I try to think at least that line of thought. So that makes a lot of sense. In terms of pricing, you know, what are you seeing in the market and you know, how are you dealing with the roller coaster of pricing and availability?
I'm going to speak freely here. Unfortunately, the patients are the ones that are suffering because everybody just wants to charge recreational prices these days, even for medical product. It's unfortunate. I don't know if it's a lack of supply or just they're trying to get the money because they know they can. I know that producers don't like the fact that people buy it on the medical side and then flip it to the recreational side. I think that was kind of it wasn't the best thought out plan for supplying the recreational market. But I just see the prices keep going up and up. People keep talking about Croptober, and I really hope it does come and the price of flower can go down. But I mean, you talked about demographics on my shelf. I like to have a $6 gram. It doesn't have to be amazing weed. Trust me, it does not have to. I put stuff out there that I personally would not smoke, but I put it out at $6 a gram, and guess what? It's my best seller every day because it is just like anything. Not everybody can afford to smoke a $20 gram every day, but people need marijuana every day.
Yeah. That's why they move so much Bud Light, you know? Milwaukee, the best. 100%. People love that. You need to have it. You got to have the different tiered pricing structures for people that either don't want to get, you know, super high off of something that is, you know, in, you know, THC values of 25 plus or whatever. People just want something to smoke, something to mellow them out, and they don't want to pay a lot of money. And yeah, you're right. We do need those lower tiered flowers in order to satisfy that part of the market. And I was wondering, what are you finding as far as your customers when it comes to how they buy, how they purchase their flower? Are they looking at those THC numbers over everything else? Are people actually asking about terpenes? Like, how do you guys handle that?
They want THC. It's just like anything. If you go to any brand of cartridge, I want this brand of cartridge. The next question is, what is the highest tester? And then that's the one they buy the most of. It's so silly. Even for a half a percent, they will take the one that's half a percent higher because they feel they're getting more for their money.
But then that doesn't jive with the lower price flower situation. Because typically, I mean, I know that from our standpoint, as a wholesaler, if we have something that hits 30%, and we do, we're going to charge more just because.
Oh, you can, and people will. If you have a 30%er, people will pay $20 a gram for that all day. And that's a fair price. On the 6% stuff, it ranges anywhere. I've had stuff as terrible as 7%. But people still sold out. And then the best I think it was like a 13%er at $6 a gram. But that stuff's hard to find. It really is.
So, you know, one thing that's looming here and is affecting what we're talking about with these pricings, Jake, is like with October 1st, the caregivers obviously cannot supply the medical market anymore. And we saw a big change and shift in the market when they cut off the caregiver supply going to the rec, you know, months ago. But one thing I have a question for you is, you've been successful in the medical market, and I'm fascinated to watch this happen next, is there's been a lot of stores done really well with the model of, you know, really, really inexpensive bud and flower, getting it from maybe all over the place, who knows, and having this and just churning. And pretty soon that's going to stop, and they're going to have to buy from licensed med growers, and those prices are double of probably what they used to be used to. So as a retailer, how would you go about having patients and customers used to $25 and $30 eights, and now they're going to have to be buying $50 eights, and it might not be as good? I mean, this is about to play out at the beginning of the year, and what do you think about that, and how have you been able to be successful and kind of ride both sides of the fence all the way into the full market?
Well, it's funny because I do it right now, man. I still got Herbal Solutions, who are great guys, and I love them and want them to get licensed, but unfortunately right now they're temporary operators, and they are still rocking that same price range every day against us. For the past 2.5 years I've been licensed. So I think we do pretty well. I think there is something to be said about people wanting tested medicine. You know, I never bought that because I've been smoking weed since I was 15, and it was never tested for the first 20 years. I smoked it, and I don't think it's dangerous, as some of these big corporate weed growers like to say. But unfortunately, with general perception and the general population, there is something. They see a value in that test, and they pay for it.
Yeah, well, that's I did not know that Herbal Solutions, and yeah, those guys are great guys. It's unfortunate they're not licensed. You know,
I just wanted to have a license, and I don't know why. I mean, I really don't know why they're not. Andrew Brisbane told me it was my fault that they're still operating, because I was on the side of the caregivers and wanted to keep the caregivers going.
Well, that's fine.
So, I think I'm being punished a little bit by him, but it's okay. I just smile, take my licks, and keep my head down and just try to keep selling good weed.
Yeah. And so, speaking of that, how did you open up in Sticky Detroit? That's a medical only market. I hear people doing really well medical only in that market, and I hear people down to where they're, you know, only doing 1,000 or 2,000 a day and going out of business. And tell me about that. And also, you have one of the, what many would consider maybe the best spot or top couple spots in that.
I hope so. Sticky Detroit, that was fun. We opened that right before the pandemic, so it was literally like 2 weeks before the world stopped, and we opened a dispensary. We were all very scared, but it worked out really well. Sales are up after 6 months. You know, I'm happy to say we're averaging like 80 patients a day. We're for a business only open been in 6 months in a saturated market, I'm pretty proud of. Business is paying for itself now. So, yeah, really happy with Detroit. I'm a little scared if Detroit ever does go recreational, because you talk about a product shortage now. Nobody really thinks about it. If Detroit goes recreational, the people in that town have all the money to buy all the product.
Oh, man.
That we have. If Detroit goes recreational, we will have a huge product shortage.
Man, that brings up such a good point. You know, you've got these major metropolitan areas, you know, like Detroit and Detroit Metro. And then you also have, you know, Grand Rapids, you know, Traverse City, also another big tourist town that in the summer I'm sure will inflate. It's like, I'm not sure if the market's ready for it yet. You had mentioned Croptober. I mean, we do a lot of scanning of what's going on in the outdoor market. And, you know, I know that nobody wants to go on a radio show and talk about mids, but it does set the price floor and it does set the base for, I would say, arguably 30% of the market, because that's distillate fuel. You're able to make mixtures, you're able to make edibles, you're able to make, you know, any number of basic bait cart or any distillate, you know, byproduct, you know, that's going to be added into a value-added good. And if you don't have that, then people are going to be buying from indoor, and that affects concentrate prices and everything. That's few and far between. So, you know, to your point, you know, those are big markets that I'm not sure if the Michigan supply is really ready for it. So that's great insight.
Well, it just goes to show you that there's room for growth, obviously, still. We have a lot of people waiting on licensure. We have, there's already a ton of canopy space happening, being built out, but the process is very slow, you know, and we have this October deadline that, you know, the recreational market can't even play with the caregiver stuff, but now we have, you know, we're going to be taking all of that potential market out of the mix, you know, for the medical market too. And it is potentially a huge shortage. And I've noticed, just as our inability to supply our customers as well as we would like to, with COVID hitting, we had to, you know, reduce the size of our trim room, spread everyone out, you know, going to second shifts. We're trying to do everything we can to keep our quality and everything, and to keep enough product supplied to the people that we work with. And we'd love to get on your shelves as soon as possible, but we've been feeling it too. I mean, it's amazing the growth of this market, how many people are going to stores consuming cannabis, and not to mention the fact that the black market is booming in Michigan.
Yeah, it's sales are like that. You're right on, Tom. From what I hear, you know, this is back in like 2009 and 10 on black market type pricing, and you know, we're talking about the current market. I like to watch Leaflink. We're not on it, but I like to watch the pricing. And I saw, you know, a kilo of distillate go from 45 grand all the way to 52. 1,000 just on the market, and I'm hearing that some of it's selling at that price. So what does it look like? And, you know, like, so this Croptober is hitting, we're talking about it, but, and all these new canopy spaces coming online, but we're a year out on a lot of the new canopy, maybe on the first harvest, and those first harvests hit, what's the quality of that? Does it all go to distillate? So top end flower probably doesn't have a drop off for a while. But what are you seeing on, if you want to talk about it, Jake, what are you seeing on different pricing from first time harvest to the top end to the bottom? You know, I'm interested to hear that, because I try to talk to buyers to find out what's going on. And well, I just love to hear about the pricing you're seeing right now.
So pricing right now, like I said, everything's going up a little bit because everyone's worried about the flip. You got your sun growers and all the sun grown weed, the greenhouse stuff. I mean, that was selling as low as 18. Right now it's up to maybe like 2,200, as high as 2,700. And I think the top sun grown stuff I've seen testing around 20%, they're trying to get 3,200 for. New guys coming out of the gate, those guys are the ones that are ridiculous, because they come out and they want to charge $4,000 for their weed and they're brand new. I mean, I'm only paying $4,000 a pound if it's between 25 and 30%. because then I know I can get $20 a gram for it. And then if I really want to move it, I got to mark it down to 15. It's just, it's the way the market is. I can't believe people come out and try to go so high with their first crop. And it's like, I mean, I don't fault them. They were the first ones with the very first license, but it's like when High Life Farms came out, they were selling pounds for 3,000 with seeds in it. How is your first crop going to be good? Any grower knows it takes three turns to really dial in a room and dial in your product. You can't ask for top dollar in your first round. You just can't.
Yeah, I think it's everyone trying to hit those pro formas, you know, and that's what the investment capital was told. And so they got to make good on that. And it's just it sets expectations that are just like you said, it hurts the patients at the end of the day. I got a question for you, Jake, and that is, you know, we talk about a lot of flower, we talk about a lot of generic concentrates, vape carts, those are the, you know, some of the big three that's there. What's missing from the store? Like, what are people asking for that hasn't been delivered yet?
You know, it sounds so dumb. They don't have a sucker. I haven't seen a sucker on LeafLink anywhere. I stock LeafLink every day. I haven't seen a sucker come out on the market. I think people kind of like their little suckers. There's definitely not enough RSO. They've sold out of all the RSO. I mean, I think Cannalicious is the only one with some left, and it's like a 1-to-1. So it's not even as strong as most of the real true cancer patients need and want it to be.
Yeah, yeah.
RSO always seems to be the one that suffers the most first, though.
Are you catering to a lot of patients still?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. I know it seems like Ipsy and Ann Arbor are pretty deep. They're pretty, entrenched into the patient-caregiver relationship. What do you think is, like, as far as, like, percentage of sales goes, would be, like, adult use to medical?
Right now, I mean, we've only been recreational for about a month in Ipsy, and it's already about 50-50 right now.
Okay.
And it's starting to get a little more recreational, but, I mean, we still split our store right in half, and we did buy an old empty McDonald's right next door, so we're planning on moving at the end of the year. So we have a little more space, and we're going to design a nice medical patient room and then a nice, beautiful, obviously, recreational showroom.
Nice.
Jake, what are your thoughts on that as far as you see people every day in your stores? Do you think people are just giving up their medical cards and going over the recreational market? Or do you really feel like there are more and more people that are recreational users coming over to the regulated side to buy their flower?
We advocate to all the recreational people to go get your card. First of all, you save 10%. That's the biggest thing. It's terrible being a retailer and somebody walk into a store, look at one item on this side, it'd be $15. Look on the other side, it's $20, and there's no difference. So we tell people, we're like, go get your card, man. You get fresher meds because they're not as old, because people didn't sit on them for 30 days, so they could flip them. They usually are more stringent testing. You can get higher dosages. And it's just, you save the 10% excise tax. I mean, I know it's bad. You don't want to give the money to your government, but on the flip side, it is medicine and people shouldn't be taxed for it.
I think it also just disincentivizes the black market too, because it's a price thing. It's like you said, the college kid, which, you know, if anyone's looking at transaction data, you know, the younger the generation, the more frugal they are. You know, like my father, you know, if he goes to a dispensary, then he's probably going to cash out at least $100, you know, but for the kid who's, you know, who's just trying to get high, he's probably only going to have, you know, less than $20 on him. So having cheaper product makes more purchasing power. And then that also disincentivizes the black market, which has been inherently cheaper because it doesn't have the licensing fees.
Exactly.
Hey, Jake, I don't know how much you can talk about it, but would love to hear about the process of you getting your third store. And
I'm excited, man. It was just,
cool.
My whole thing's about relationships, man. My friend who has the other two sides of the corners, he's got the gas station and he's got the, there's a plaza across the street. He's been on those corners for 61 years. So when the city of Southfield came out and started to do marijuana, he was one of the first ones to see the map, and they just so happened to circle the property across the street who he was friends with. So we made a deal with the property owner, and with his, you know, great business in dealings in Southfield for the past 61 years, and with me already being a licensed business member and, you know, being part of the MCAIA and being an upstanding cannabis member, you know, the city of Southfield was gracious enough to grant me one of their first licenses. So we recently, last week, we tore down the old gas station. We're starting to dig out a basement, and we're building a full brand new state-of-the-art facility. You know, we got a transport garage on there. So one thing I don't like about how they do the rules, man, the transports just pull up in the back alley. And it's like, I thought we got regulated to get away from that kind of stuff. So we built a nice garage right in our dispensary. Transporters can drive right in, close the garage. We can do our all transactions in the basement. And just being in that area, I mean, I grew up in that area. I used to go to Tel 12 Mall right there. It's a high traffic, high volume area. I think my friend who owns the gas station, this is a funny fact, he is the number one seller of blunt wraps in the state of Michigan.
Oh, man. So
I definitely think there's a market for someone in my business right there.
Hey, Jake, I got one more question for you there, and it's how you base your relationships. I've heard you talk about it several times on the show. Is, you know, you're in a relationship industry, and you know, how are you basing your vendors? Is it price? Is it relationships? Is there some other intrinsic value that you're rating your relationships off of? Do you mind divulging?
No, not at all. First of all, don't lie to me. I mean, all these other people are salespeople, and they tell me they're going to come through the product, and then it doesn't come through. It is about relationships. I mean, people have studied sales. I mean, people buy from people that they like. It's just human nature. If I have a salesman that I go drink beers with after work and have a good time, I'm more apt to buy weed from him than I am the guy who just shoots me an email once a week with everything he's got. It's just a classic way of doing business. I mean, I know we have computers, and now with COVID, we have Zoom calls, and there's no more handshakes, and everyone has a mask, and nobody wants to talk. I think there still is an old school way of doing business, and it was kind of how we all grew up doing business in the caregiver market. I mean, we were so underground, we had to know each other, and we had to be in closed confined quarters and shake hands because we were doing backroom deals. But it's just about trusting the people you work with, knowing they're going to give you a good product, knowing they're just not out to, you know, gouge you because they can. It's, yeah, just, I guess, an old school mentality of doing business. I guess I'm old now.
You know, it's great to hear that, you know, because, you know, for those that know, nowadays it's all about just TPS reports, pro formas, circling back, and it is a relationship business. So, you know, thank you for the validation there.
No, of course, man. We're artists. This is what we do. I tell everyone we should have fun. We sell weed. We have the best job in the world. We should have fun. If we're not having fun, then it's time to get out of the weed business.
Absolutely.
That's refreshing. Fit right in on the show, Jake. So yeah, it's been a fun one. Running out of time, I wanted to let Sam and Tom and Jake give any last thoughts, and we'll see you next week. So Sam, any final thoughts?
No, I think I've exhausted them over the course of this call. You know, you want a job? It sounds like you're pretty personable here. So, you know, I'm sure we'd love to have you on the show again. Other than that, you know, keep up the great work. Keep hustling, man. And it's great to hear that there's, you know, there's familiar faces out there, you know, pushing forward in the right direction for this industry. So much appreciated.
Yeah, Jake, I just wanted to reiterate what we had spoke about earlier, is that I promise I'm not ghosting you. I promise. But we're really looking forward to the point where we can, you know, work together. I feel like we do share a lot of the same values and a lot of great insight today, and really appreciate your time.
Thanks. It was my pleasure being on. I'll come back anytime you guys want to have me. I just like to talk. It's like my old roommate and one of my friends, Jacob Grieba from Midnight Roots, always says, passion makes the difference. And you just got to be passionate about what you do, man. And it's not a job. And I mean, what's more passionate than weed? It's one of the best things on the planet.
Well, thanks again, Jake, Tom, Sam. I just want to reiterate, this is we talked about the market, and there's a lot of new growers and coming on, and they're going to have the decision of either going for the highest dollar amount they can, and, you know, kind of hurting the supply chain, or kind of doing what's right to where everybody's winning. And I know we're all committed to that on there, and we want to see great stores like Sticky Ipsy's and all the other ones succeed and be the ones that are kicking butt. So just, it's great to hear that the people that are out there doing it are passionate about cannabis, and that seems to be one of the biggest difference maker right now. So with that, thanks for everyone for being on, and we'll see everyone next week.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, guys.
The Smoke and Rope Podcast is produced and hosted by me, Ryan Basor, the owner of Redemption Cannabis. Have ideas for episode topics or would like to be a guest on the show? Contact us at ryanb@redemptioncanna.com. Thanks for being along for the journey.